So glad you all were here. I was telling them I'm up against the heavy hitters. All of, you got Jerry Edmond and Bob Yandelin and or is that how you say his name?
Yandian.
Anyway, Bob. Yeah, Brother Bob. And I told him I feel like the guy that took his old swayback mule to the horse race. And he everybody's pulling up with their horse trailers, and they were all getting them out, and he was just leading this old nag, you know, this old swayed back mule. He was leading it over, and they said, "This is a horse race." He said, "I know," and he just kept pulling. He goes, "You're not gonna win." He said, "I know." He said, "This is for thoroughbreds." He said, I know. He said, "Well, why would you bring an old swayback mule like that?" He said, "Well, I just thought the exposure would do him some good." I guess that's what I'm doing. I'm just giving me some good exposure. That's about all. It's good to see you today. Let me just tell you about my life and kind of go from there. When we talk about ministerial courtesy and responsibility, hopefully, I don't believe there's any probably that make any egregious violations of that, but rather I just want to talk to us today about some things that maybe we can put into our lives that will make a tremendous difference. I'm 53 years old. I have two daughters. They are 19 and 24. I have a wonderful wife. Her name is Jill, and she's from Southern California. I was smart enough to marry somebody from Southern California so I'd have some place to go on vacation. And so she is a wonderful woman of God, and I am blessed. As a matter of fact, we met on a blind date. And that's how, actually, I had one eye open. I knew who she was, kind of, but she didn't know who I was. And so it was, I was 27 when I got married, and so I started a little bit later in life. But anyway, got it kick-started and got on the right track. I grew up in a pastor's home. My father was a pastor, and he pastored early on. He grew up Baptist and had gotten involved with the Latter Rain movement and the healing evangelists, and just messed him up, and they gave him the left foot of fellowship, and so he was kicked out. They told on him that he was lifting his hands in his backyard praying, and so the Baptist didn't want him, and so he said, "I wasn't doing it at the time," he said, "but after that," he said, "I thought I'd better do it since..." So that's kind of his background. Started a church in Alton and got invited to this church in Granite City that was Pentecost Church of God. And again, I'm not trying to throw off on any denomination or anything of the sort, but what I simply want to just relate is where I'm coming from. Sometimes you need to know where folks are coming from so you kind of are able to filter their life. He was invited to church in 1959 to preach a revival. They liked him and asked him to become their pastor. Well, the church in Alton was struggling, and so he left that with another gentleman and came down and pastored in Granite City. Felt like that was where he needed to be. So I was born in 1960, so I grew up knowing nothing but pastor's home. The church there was a family-run church. I don't know if you know what that means. Anybody know what family-controlled? You know, the family had the finances, and so therefore they called the shots. And so what they would do is every so often they'd get a new preacher in, and if they couldn't run him off, they'd starve him to death, one of the two, you know. So it had been a habit, and so somewhere along the line, Dad, this church up in Alton had stopped or had closed their doors, and so they were having to put their money into another nonprofit for a dissolution. And when they did, they gave him the money to put into the church there in Granite City. When they did, he went ahead and the family the church owed money to this family, and so he paid this family off. Made the family all mad. So you know what happens when the family gets mad? They all leave. So the next week you got mom and dad and this these kids, you know, my two sisters, myself, and one other lady that wasn't part of the family, and we started church. So in 1962, you start from scratch. And the Lord began to bless, and throughout all of that, that's how we really, that's how he established the church there in Granite City. We, through a number of, a course of events, moved and pulled out of the organization because of the politics and things like that. I don't know if anybody knows anything about church politics. No, nothing about church politics. And so, anyway, by establishing this, it's almost like establishing a brand new work. And so, because of that, he was really able to lay a good foundation for me. I am blessed because of his labors. And I realize that I didn't get there by myself. That everything that I have is because people before me paved the way, they gave their life, they gave their sweat. And so I'm thankful for that. I'm thankful for my heritage. I said that to maybe draw some conclusion or some truths, because Dad, I learned from Dad some responsibilities and some courtesy along the way. You know, Dad's August 3rd, he will be 88 years old. Dad is still on staff at our church. He still comes in every morning at 9:30. As a matter of fact, at 9:30 he's praying. From 9:30 to 10:30, he'll be in the prayer room, and he's praying. You know what? That's the foundation that I have, and I'm thankful for that. That's the reason why that things are going. It's not because of any thing that we've put on or any program, but rather, it's the presence of God. I fully agree with everything our brother said last night. If without the power of God, you just have a good club, and you can have that anywhere. But the presence of God is what makes the difference. And so Dad came from that mindset of deliverance and healing. And so that's really, our church continues to be in that vein. But along the way, he also had a tremendous amount of wisdom. Whenever we moved to the new property, the old property was deeded to the organization. So we had to, when we moved, we decided we're going to buy property and it was going to be our own for the churches. Would own the property. And so he went out and found a tract of land, 5 acres, and out on the edge of town where nobody was, and as he flew over it with, I don't know if anybody remembers L.D. Pitts. He was part of Blackwell, Oklahoma. He was the pastor before Robert Johnson several years. Anyway, he was a friend of my dad's. He had flown over this area, and so Dad bought this piece of land. Church actually bought the piece of land, the tract of land. He subdivided it into 5 lots, and then he had the church lot. What he did was he bought the first lot, and then he sold the other 4 to people from the church and paid for the church property. So you go in with the property paid for and without the encumbrance or a debt. And so just simple wisdom and being frugal and being wise in those things are really the things that I have learned. Responsibility, things like paying your bills and paying your bills on time and making sure that you have a good name. That's why we've continued in Granite City, same location for all these years, is because you do things ethically and morally correct. You make sure that you stay above the fray. We've seen pastors, we've got now a Maryville Road has opened up, and it used to be a 2-lane blacktop that ended about a mile down from us or south of us, and now it is one of the main thoroughfares. So we've got churches that line the road there. I've seen pastors come and go. I know the pastors. I know Hank Crippen and Rich Cope, and I know the Jeff Smith, and you go on down a little farther and is Barry Shepherd, all within a mile of my doors. I know these guys. These are my friends. And so when we talk about ethical responsibility and courtesy, another aspect of that is making sure that those around you are people that you love and appreciate and that you honor them. We making sure that I'm not in competition with Rich Cope. He's got an Assembly of God church there. We're not in competition. Whenever I have somebody from his church that comes to my church, you know what I call? I've got Rich's number, and I say, "Hey, Rich, so and so was at church this morning. He's one of yours because he put on his little sheet." You know, sometimes I don't know him, but he put on his little thing. Oh, I attend City Temple or whatever, and so I can let him know. You know, whenever we're going to, when we're going to have a, if you're going to be in a, an area for a long time, you've got to be able to talk to people and be able to know that you can communicate so that they know that I'm not trying to steal their sheep. I don't want to steal them. If they left, that means they're wandering somewhere. Now, you know what I do? I want to make sure that I love them. And if there's something, sometimes he would say, and matter of fact, he said it. He said, yeah, they talk to me. If they talk to him, he says, you know what? This is the situation that they left in. You know coming in what you're dealing with. And you know whether or not it's something that is a flaw or whatever. And so, simple things, but nevertheless make a big difference if you're going to live in a community and continue to minister in a community. I'm dealing mostly with pastoring because that's what I am. I'm not an evangelist. I'm not a missionary. I take mission trips, but you know what? That's not my calling. That's not where I've had my heart. I love mission. Matter of fact, I believe that our church is blessed because of the mission giving. As a matter of fact, my dad has taught this for years, and I've seen it again this year whenever we started again another campaign. But any time that we would increase missions, our church finances would grow. You've seen it. You could see it. You could mark it. This is whenever you started, and this is kind of a side note. I don't know if anybody's here that is a part of a board or anything. If you are, God bless you. And let me just mention this. We have the greatest board members. Matter of fact, we have lifetime board members. I know that's against all the rules, but we do, and it's wonderful. Because everybody's up to speed, and it's wonderful men of God. And you know what? We pray the other ones off. We've had some that came and went, and we just pray them off. When you get a bad one, you just, God knows how to take care of His church. And He knows how to give wisdom and wise people to us. What I was going to say was this, that any time that the pastor's salary has ever been raised, there's an increase in the church finances. Amazing to see. Now you can't preach that every Sunday morning or anything of the sort, and I can't tell that, but I'm just letting you know that, you know what, God has His hand upon you. He knows every need that you have. He knows how to take care of you. He knows where you're at, and He knows all about your needs. And so don't feel like you're out in the desert by yourself. And when I look around this room, I realize that men like Joe here could probably talk to us more about pastoring as well. Different experiences. We've all had different experiences. Every one of us. When I talk about our brother here, the evangelist, that different experiences. And so what I want to share today is more about just some generalities and some things that I feel like are tremendously important. Out of all the things that I feel like is tremendously important is this. Whenever we'll talk about how to treat an evangelist and all that in a minute, but let me talk about us first, because I believe that if you don't take care of your own life, your chief responsibility is here before it's there. If your life is not in order, you've got a problem. Hebrews chapter 12. I'll go back to this, but Hebrews chapter 12. I believe that there's three things that we need to make sure that our lives are free from, and make sure that our lives are in order in God's eyes. Number one is this. He says, seeing we're compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin that doth so easily beset us. Encumbrances. Things that weighed us down. Maybe it's something that somebody said years ago to us, or maybe it's a situation you're dealing with now. An encumbrance can be anything, a weight, a burden that you're carrying. I failed to mention this, but let me just add it right here. The Lord is faithful throughout all of this. You know, whenever we have needs or burdens, I remember distinctly a time whenever I was on the phone. I know the place where I was. I can still picture the phone that I was using whenever I was talking on the phone. And the Lord spoke the words. He said, no weapon formed against you will prosper. This lady was screaming almost. And the Lord's voice overpowered her. And He said, no weapon formed against you will prosper. And every tongue that rises against you in judgment, I will condemn. Yeah. God knows how to take care of you. Whenever we talk about encumbrances, and that's one of the first things I think that we need to make sure that our lives are free from, because when you walk into the pulpit, if you're just preaching from Facebook information, you've got a problem. And you'll split your church and people will run in terror, and I'm sure that doesn't please God.
I agree.
Number two is this. He goes, let us run with patience the race that is set before us. Running with patience, it's just an attitude. Now, a lot of preachers have attitudes. Some attitudes will kill you. When we talk about attitude, I'm talking about this, that you have a right attitude, that our attitudes are right, that we're free from malice and hatred and anger, jealousy. You know, if God wanted to put you somewhere else, He knows how to do that. He put you where you are. Let me tell you how the Lord put me where I am. You say, well, of course, you were raised in Granite City and you had to go back. No, I didn't. In 1984, I was really making a choice. I can't tell you this without telling you the rest of my story. In 1978, I went to Southern Illinois University, SIU, and I was going to be a pre-dental student. And got accepted into the program, was in there and doing well. Well, I pledged a fraternity that winter semester. Anybody know anything about fraternities? All of you lived in church life, okay. Well, let me just let you know, Animal House is about right. So, if you've ever seen anyway. So, I was over here a little bit, that would be about right. Well, the Lord was dealing with my heart. I'll never forget as the Lord called me to go to Bible school. I was going to college and things were, you know, I was passing classes and everything else, but I wasn't living right and I knew that I wasn't where God wanted me to be. And so, consequently, I went to a faith Bible school. Now, when I talk about faith, I'm not talking about Kenneth Copeland faith. I'm talking about we were praying for another chicken so that we would have food that day. You know, they didn't charge tuition, and so we were up on Export Hill where we were praying that the food would come in because otherwise we weren't going to eat. And there were many times whenever it was a little bit close, a little rough. So whenever I talk about faith Bible school, we plucked chickens and scalded them and you know, I gutted chickens. Missionary training, I'm telling you, I know how to do it. I know how to do it. Not by choice, but rather so that we would have chicken to eat. And so it was a great experience. So the Lord took me from over here, fraternity life, to over here where we weren't even allowed to look at girls, let alone sit with them or talk to them. And you had social hour that's all kinds of crazy. I could talk about that. But anyway, what it did was this. It took me back over here so that I could finally get to the middle and be a little bit normal. I know that the jury's out on that one. But the reality is, the Lord brought me to those places so after I got out of Bible school, the Lord had given me a solid foundation of training, Bible training, went back to SIU, all the frat brothers were gone, and I had finished a degree in speech communication. Trying to decide which way to go, I was dating a girl from Kentucky and getting a lot of pressure to move to Kentucky. You know, had a pretty good opportunity there. And my dad said, you know, Mark, he said, you've been volunteering here at the church, and he said, you're doing a great job, and he said, now I haven't talked to the board about this. He said, but I here's what I'd like you to do. He said, I really feel like you need to be on staff here at the church. He said, we don't have any staff. It's just me, but I feel like you need to be it. I want to pay you this much money, and this is your title. And he said, now I haven't talked to the board yet, so don't go off. The phone rings on this Sunday afternoon while we're waiting on Mom's roast to get out of the oven, because every Sunday we ate roast. And so we were sitting there in the living room, the phone rings, and it was Glenn Johnson. Hey Mark, a phone call. And Glenn Johnson is not one that gets three visions and prophecy before breakfast, you know. He's just not that kind of guy. He's a steel worker, just a regular blue collar guy, doesn't see, you know, has never, I don't think, ever prophesied or anything of the sort. But nevertheless, good man. He's part of the board. And he said, Mark, I want you to come out to my house. Well, I'd been out of his house. I actually drew the plans for it. So I went out to his house and after lunch, I sat there and he said, you know, me and some of the board members were talking and he said, now we haven't talked to your dad yet, but He said, we feel like you need to be a part of the church and part of the pastoring. And he said, we feel like we need to pay you this much money and this should be your title. This is the same words that Dad had said 30 minutes before. You know what? Let me tell you what that does. Every one of us deals with insecurity. I don't care if we have the best church. I don't care if you've got everything under your belt. You got all the things shined up and everything looks good. Everybody deals with insecurity at one time or another and in some way or another. You deal with insecurity wondering if you're good enough or how come somebody else is getting blessed and I'm not. Or, you know, we deal with all kinds of junk, insecurity. Like it or not, it's important for you to encourage somebody because those around you, they're insecure. That's why I call that pastor whenever somebody comes over. We're insecure. Let me tell you that whenever somebody starts to leave, you start feeling insecure. Maybe I'm not called. So the Lord takes me back to those moments. Remember Glenn Johnson? Yeah. Remember the word I spoke to you? Yeah. He's given me words like, I'll build my church. One time I was just grieving over somebody that was that left. I couldn't eat lunch, couldn't do anything, just boo-hooing, and somebody's leaving, and they told me, oh yeah, we're going to go to another church. And it just broke my heart. Well, the Lord just told me. He said, you know what? I will build my church and the gates of hell will not prevail against it. You don't know what comfort that's been. Every time I start to grieve and start to boo-hoo and start to... He says, you know what? I'll build my church. He said, everyone that leaves, I'll bring you two. So I've encouraged a few more to... No, I'm just kidding. Throughout all of these things, the Lord has been faithful. And He'll be faithful to you. Taking care of ourselves, making sure that our attitudes are right. You thought I forgot all about where I was at. Hebrews chapter 12. Getting the right attitude. You know what? I can get a wrong attitude about somebody that leaves and I get mad and angry and it, what it does is it poisons my spirit and it poisons me. It doesn't do a thing for them or to them. We can get bad attitudes even about our lives, and so we got to make sure that our attitudes are right. Now when I talk about courtesy and responsibility, sometimes you think, Mark, you're off the wall here. You're way off. But I'll tell you what, I believe that if you don't have this going on and this right, you can do all the nice things you want. You can write a great thank you letter for coming. But I'll tell you what, the Lord's interested in building you so that you can help Him build His church. Lay aside every weight, sin that does so easily beset us. Let us run with patience the race that set before us, looking unto Jesus, the author and the finisher of our faith. He's the focus of our life. You know what? Rich Culp, Hank Crippen, Barry Shepherd, those guys that are pastoring in they're not the benchmark of how good I'm doing or how good I'm not doing. The guy across town, the guy across the country. We can't measure ourselves. You know what? We're different folks. Brother Ted has a powerful ministry. Brother Joe has got a powerful ministry. These guys have powerful ministries here in this room. These women have powerful ministries. That are tremendous and blessed. And you know what? If I try to measure myself, I say, you know what? I can't possibly teach like Sister Pat can. I can't possibly. I've got some of your material. You don't even know this. I got some of your material. That wonderful, wonderful material. To think we can't measure ourselves. It's like saying apples and oranges. It's different. And so let your focus be Jesus. Do I look like Him? Does my life look like Him? Am I being a Christian in the way that I treat people? Am I doing what's right? Am I sure that the Lord is... You know what? We deal with those insecurities, and I'll tell you what, they will come out and bite you if you're not careful.
Yes, they will.
Three things that you can change. You can change your encumbrances. You can lay aside those weights, those sins. Maybe if you're in habits that you shouldn't be in, those are things that you need to get rid of so that the devil doesn't have condemnation over you. If there's attitudes that you know aren't right, if you're on the highway and you're steaming because somebody's in front of you driving the speed limit, there's something wrong with you. If you think it's the Antichrist changing the light and making a red light in front of you, you've got an attitude problem and you need to get right. Oh, it's the truth anyway. And with every head bowed and every eye closed right now, I can tell I just hit a real nerve there. Boy,
oh, it's training.
Yeah, really, this ride that wave, huh? There's two things that we'll get to all this. I'm promising we're going to get to this stuff. It's easy stuff. There's two things though that the Lord spoke to my heart about this session, and I feel like I need to make sure I do it. In regard to our own lives, let me talk to you about two things. Number one is this: our schedules. Your schedule. Who makes your schedule? Do you have a schedule? Do you have a planner? I've got a my Outlook pops up on my desktop, and I know what. Do you have a planner? You got some kind of a plan? Maybe you got a book. Maybe you got a little calendar or something. You know what? In regard to your schedule, I believe that pastors can be one of the other, one way or the other. And we've got to be very careful to guard against both. Number one is this, that sometimes that we get lazy. I've heard pastors say they don't have time to do this and that. I said, well, what are you doing? The reality is, come on, I pastor as many as you do, and you've got time to do what you want to do. If you don't, there's something wrong. So sometimes we can get in the lazy mode where we get overwhelmed with being overwhelmed and we get burned out. I have a problem with burned out too, because sometimes I just wonder if they were ever lit is what I wonder. Okay, that's me. I'm sorry. That was in the flesh. We'll take that off the tape recording, the little thing here. But then the other side is this, being too busy. Being so busy with being busy. You got busy stuff. And you know what? It grates me whenever they say, oh, Pastor, I know you're busy. I don't want to be busy. I want to be effective. I don't just want to be busy. Busy just means that you're buzzing around, you know, busy. So you get lazy or busy? So in regard to your schedules, write this question down. Number one is this. What would your schedule look like if God made it? What would your schedule look like if God made it? I know that all of you are so holy if you're saying, oh yes, God already makes my schedule. Really? When we talk about this, I'm thinking of this. What are the things that God wants from you and wants you to do? I have a feeling that if you were to look at your schedule, there's a lot of stuff on there that probably He didn't have anything to do with. There's a lot of things that we involve ourselves with that you say, Mark, it's supposed to be ministerial courtesy and responsibility. Okay, I'm going, this is the responsibility part. Our schedules. Being Christ-like. Being God-like. Making sure that our schedules reflect Him. To be like Jesus doesn't mean that you just carry the big King James, you know, and you got your hair parted on the side. Doesn't mean... To be like Jesus, to honor Him in your schedule. The second question that we have to ask in regard to our schedules is, what do you want to become? What is it that the Lord's taking you to? What is it that He wants from you? What does He want your life to be? You see, I believe that your schedule has the ability to reframe your future. I believe that your schedule and your time and the things you give your life to have the ability to change where you're going. You say, but I'm too old for that. No, you're not. You're not too young, not too old. I believe that every one of us. Let me give you a practical illustration of this. Anybody ever heard of a guy by the name of John Grisham? What does he do? He's written a couple. He's a fair writer, I would say. He's going to make it one of these days if he keeps trying. Do you know that he was a lawyer? That he was a lawyer before he was an author. And as a matter of fact, he hated being a lawyer, and so that's the reason why he wanted to write. And so what he did was, this is how he started out. He didn't just say, well, you know what, God called me to be a writer, and therefore I'm just going to quit. He rather made his schedule 60 minutes before his workday started. 60 minutes he would set and determine he's going to write one page a day in his schedule. He put it on his schedule. And it changed his life. Heard another guy say, well, you know what, I've always wanted to weld. You know what? So what he did was he took 102 days and he went to the junior college and found those classes and became a welder. He hated his job and didn't have a skill, and so he put it on his schedule that every Tuesday and Thursday and Friday nights he was going to go from 6 to 8 and he was going to become a welder. And for 102 weeks he finished that course, 2 years. Changed his life because he changed his schedule. Let me ask you, what is the Lord talking to you about being, doing? Do we just talk about other people growing or do we talk about us growing? Where is the Lord taking you? Maybe the Lord wants you to learn Spanish. That's one of the things that I'm doing. I just feel like the Lord wants me to do. I'm going to go do it. I found the class at the junior college, community college, and so I'm going to go do it. What does the Lord want you to do? What does He want you to be? You say, oh man, I want to be in shape. Really? Let me see your schedule. Is it in there? If it's not in there, it's not going to happen. You know how people know whether or not you're going to have an appointment? It's because it's on the schedule. Ministerial responsibility is all about us taking responsibility for this, making sure that our lives are in order. As a matter of fact, before we go out to the family, let's go one more thing. Number one was schedule. Number two is this. How full is your tank? In your car, you know, you have a little gas gauge. Anybody got a gas gauge on your car? Do you pay attention to that at all? Or is it when the light goes on, ding, 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 then you know you got to go get gas? Let me ask you, if I were to ask you today, where's your tank? Are you full? Oh yeah, Brother Bob preached last night. Oh brother, I am so full. Woo! I can live a week on that. Really? What's he saying today? Got to keep our tank full. You know what I found? That when I talk about a full tank, I'm talking about this. That there's no encumbrances, that my attitude's right, that I got the right focus, that you know what? That things aren't weighting me down, that my tank is full. I've rested. I've done meaningful work. There's things, you know, you're happy with yourself. You've eaten right. I thought I'd get an amen out of eating right. No, nothing. Amen. Okay, thank you. Because you know why? You don't nourish yourself. Brother Ted can give you the whole sermon on dietary plans. But the reality is, it makes a difference in your life. If you are not nourished, that it makes tremendous difference. Spiritually, if you're not nourished. If you're preaching with an empty tank, everybody knows it. Everybody knows except you. Yeah, you know it too. You know it. You know there's nothing there. You know, you got a job, but there's nothing there. Whenever you're preaching from an empty tank, whenever we're in the presence of God, when I talk about a full tank, I'm talking about this. I pray better whenever my tank's full. I make better decisions when my tank is full. I love people more whenever my tank's full. I enjoy life more whenever my tank's full. Don't you?
Yeah.
Whenever I'm coasting on fumes, I'll tell you what, that's whenever I get mean and angry and ugly, and any small thing is a big thing. If you're coasting there and your needle's getting close to E and you hit a train, you know that you're in trouble. Oh man, what are we going to do now? Or you come up on a wreck and you go, man, I'm on empty here. Feel like you're going to get stranded. What fills your tank then? Do you know what nourishes you? Do you know what helps you? I believe that it's those simple things like rest. Simply scheduling rest. It's okay to schedule rest. It's okay to schedule a day off. And if you don't, you're just killing yourself. Glorifying the Lord. The Lord said, He said the Sabbath was made for you, not for me. It's for you. God wants us to rest. He wants us to be nourished. He wants us, when we eat right, you remember what Elijah, he had all kinds of problem with Jezebel, and Jezebel wanted to kill him. You remember this story? And God finally found him, and he said, oh man, I just wanted to die. He didn't really want to die. If he wanted to die, he could have gone back. Jezebel would have done it for free. But he wanted to live, but he was just worn out, depressed, whatever you call it. Tank was empty. His tank was completely empty. And whenever that tank is empty, you make stupid remarks. You pick fights that you should never pick. Somebody gets on your last nerve and you tell them what you're really thinking. You get the attitude. Whenever we talk about empty tank, what replenishes you? The Lord told Elijah, or just to let Elijah sleep. And then he got him up and he fed him. And then Elijah laid back down. God didn't make it. He said, "What, you lazy prophet, I can't believe." He didn't say that at all. He let him sleep. When he got up, he fed him again. And then he sent him. He gave him a task to do. I believe that's what you have whenever you saw Mary and Martha. Martha had it up to here. That stinking Mary in there just lazying around, and here I am banging. Don't you know there were pots banging in the kitchen? Martha was dinging. I can't believe all these people are coming to dinner, and they didn't even warn me, and now this Mary is out there just lazying around with Jesus. And we get that way in our spirit lives as well. You start looking at folks going, "Man, I can't believe they're just sitting there. Don't they know there's work to do?" We've got to get ourselves refreshed so that our tank is full. Ministerial courtesy and responsibility. Things that we need to make sure that are part of our lives. I believe that one of the things that is tremendously important is making sure that you're not only yourself is taken care of, but then your family. You know what? Your family is your first call. Before you minister to anybody else, you ought to be ministering to them. They ought to be your first mission field. We've had a situation, as a matter of fact, Brother Ted would know about this gentleman, that the situation arose where his family was not being provided for, wasn't being cared for, schooling wasn't, it just couldn't do it. And it was affecting his ministry. If you aren't taking care of your family, matter of fact, you know, there's things that I don't tell Jill. Jill's my wife. I don't tell her. There's things that people have said, people have done. Don't tell her. There's people that have confided in me. Just don't tell her. She doesn't need to know. She didn't. You know what? I won't want that sweet spirit burdened down. So there's things that she doesn't have to carry. Now there's other situations where I feel like, you know, they'll say, "Well, would you share with you?" Then I do. But there's other things I don't just tell everything. Because I believe that that's part of my responsibility is to protect her as well, because I know that it would hurt her. I want to make sure my kids are taken care of. Making sure that your children are watched over. Making sure your kids are trained right. Making sure that your kids have what they need. I believe that taking care of them, whatever it takes, you know, I'll do the extra work. I'll do the extra jobs I have to. I want to make sure my kids are taken care of because I love them and they're my first ministry. I want to make sure they know Jesus Christ. I want to make sure that their lives are in order. What would happen if I would travel the whole world and lose my own soul, lose my own kids? My first church, my first ministry is right there. My kids, my wife, my family, making sure that they're provided for. When you go out a little farther, let's talk about the church itself. I believe that in regard to courtesy and responsibility, it would behoove every one of us to make sure that we are an example to the flock. And I know that you are. But when I say this, I'm saying my dad was, as I already mentioned, was by himself as the only pastor. And so therefore, he'd change light bulbs and do the plumbing, whatever. And you know what? I don't have any problem doing that as well. But as I have shown it, now I want to model it so that I don't want to ask somebody to do something I'm not willing to do. I don't just throw something off on somebody else because I just don't want to do it. But rather, along the way, and encourage them in making sure that they have every tool that they need, making sure that they have every resource they need. When you give somebody a job, you ought to make sure that they have the stuff to do the job and have the permission to do it. Taking care of your family, taking care of your church, making sure that the bills are paid.
Amen.
When we talk about a church that's going to endure in a city, you've got to make sure that you don't get in over your head. We've had churches in town, a couple of them that have gone belly up, have closed their doors, not because of false doctrine or because of anything of the sort, but rather because they got in financial trouble. They didn't plan accordingly, and therefore it caused their demise. Making sure you pay your bills. Making sure that you do what's right. Making sure even teaching your we were talking last night about our boys. One of the things that I've stressed with the kids, and when Jill was doing the youth, I making sure those kids knew how to tip. Because we live in this community. It's a 38,000 or something like that, but nevertheless, they know where you go to church. They know whenever you've got the church clothes on, you just came from church. And so, therefore, they know who you are, whether you like it or not. And the way that you conduct your life in those restaurants makes a tremendous difference. Learn how to tip. Learn how to, if you can't afford it, then maybe you ought to pull back on what you order and rather make sure that she's got some.
That's good.
That's, do you think that Jesus would try to mistreat somebody? He said the workman is worthy of his hire. And we want to make sure that we're treated correctly. How much more does the Lord want to make sure that those of our community are treated rightly? You know what, if I were to give, let me give you some little statements, and then I want you to add. This we're going to take just a little intermission right here. And I want you to add some truths, maybe some things that you've learned along the way. We won't take a lot of time, but maybe these would be some wonderful truths that I could learn from you and we could learn together. You know what I learned in church life? I learned this, that people that gossip with you will gossip about you. We got to be careful that we keep confidences, that we keep our hats on. You know, if keep it under your hat. You do. I told that first session that God has given me a great forgetter. That I can forget more than I can ever remember. And it's not just about age. You know, it's I believe the Lord just gives me a good forgetter. Thank God I don't remember. You remember what I did last year? No, I don't remember. Sorry. Thank God. It's not grace, it's good. God forgive me. Just wiped it clean and I've moved on. People that gossip about you will gossip with you. I learned that not everybody tithes. I learned that should I talk about tithing just for a minute? You know what, if you're not faithful in the unrighteous, how can you be trusted with the true riches? It's the truth. You say, well, you shouldn't look at just finances. That's just those jewels or whatever he was talking about last night, or just the ornaments. I'll tell you what, it lets you know, because like it or not, your paycheck is congealed sweat. It's your life, and how you give to the Lord and how you honor Him with your giving is a testament. I know I'm preaching to the choir. I hope I'm preaching to the choir, and if not, that's for you. Got to be careful that we're careful. Not everybody tithes. You know what else I learned? I learned that it's a whole lot easier to promote than it is to demote somebody.
Oh yeah, easier to let hands on.
I love the fact that Paul Pano years ago he said this. He said before I put a Sunday school teacher in, he said I make sure that I let the Sunday school teacher teach a week, and then I let them teach the second week, and I have somebody sitting in there with them to see if they can really teach. He said otherwise I'm stuck with a teacher that can't teach. He said, then we have a 3-month period. He said, where we agree. He said, you know what, we're going to try this out for 3 months. And after 3 months, we're going to reassess and make sure that this is going to work. And if it doesn't work, he said, we both walk away. It's a whole lot easier to promote than demote. You'll always get blood whenever you demote.